Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Texas said, could all you're saying about Ty Simpson be said about Joey Aguilar at the University of Tennessee? Good. Oh, Rocky Top. Woo. Rocky Top, Tennessee. Yeah, I think so. You know what? Let me take that back. I think a lot of what I say about Ty Simpson could be said about Joey Aguilar, but not everything. The one thing that I would say about Joey Aguilar that is different at Tennessee, because a lot of it is the same. We thought there was a possibility that Joey Aguilar, who left Appy State, went to UCLA. Nico Iamaleava ended up at UCLA, so they basically had a trade as Aguilar left UCLA and replaced Iamaleava at Tennessee. That worked out better for one of them than the other one. I think the hype was probably equivalent to Ty Simpson. That is to say, not a lot. It's more, this is interesting than maybe some of the other quarterbacks. Like, if this guy is what everybody says he is. I think we were talking more about Aguilar's athleticism, ability to use the legs to make the play. Obviously not the case, or I should say, not necessarily the case about Ty Simpson. Like, he does not look like the most athletic guy in the world. I think the one difference I would say in the game, in the play between the two of them, is that Joey Aguilar, who is a very good quarterback athletically, is also a little bit more of a risk taker, a little bit more of a gunslinger. He is going to take a lot more deep shots than Ty Simpson. He's going to throw up a lot more 60-40 balls than Ty Simpson. Simpson's the guy that's going to find you down the field, and he's going to throw it to you if you are open. And if you are not open, he's moving on to the next guy. Aguilar is going to look down the field. He's going to find a guy that can make a play and get it to that guy. And that has worked out well for Tennessee by and large. That has worked out well for Tennessee and where the Vols are right now. 4-1, the only loss to Georgia. It was a field goal loss. But you look up and down the scoreboard for this Tennessee team, they have not scored fewer than 41 points in a game so far. They put 45 on that Syracuse team that came to Clemson to beat the Tigers. They put 72 on ETSU. They put 41 on Georgia, 56 on UAB, and 41 on Mississippi State on the road.
So why are you not saying that they are the front runner to win the national championship?
I like Tennessee. I like Josh Heupel a lot. Josh Heupel is, I don't know how to describe Josh Heupel. Josh Heupel.
That sounds like the most dominant team in college football. That's what it sounds like.
Well, no. I mean,
score-wise.
I mean, they lost to Georgia, so I can't say that. They lost a game. And again, while head-to-head results, this is a conversation we might have later on in the show, because I still think people are not sure how to weight head-to-head results against head-to-head results with some weight on resume at large. And I want to get to that. But this team lost a head-to-head to Georgia. Granted, very good, very close game. But you were at home. You lost to Georgia. While the transitive property of college football, as we say, it feels like six times a week is very dangerous to a lot of fans. At the same time, Georgia turned around and got beat by the University of Alabama. I think, let me be clear about this. I think Tennessee is solidly in the mix because I do not think, while I like where Alabama is, I do not think there is a clear, scratch that. It's not what I think. There is not a clear front runner in the Southeastern Conference. I think Tennessee's got just as much chance as anybody else. Here's why I have a hesitation with the University of Tennessee. Because I've seen Joey Aguilar have some real bad moments. Because I've seen some bad decision-making. Because I've seen some moments where the gunslinger mentality ends up being a negative, right? Like, there were spots. When we talk about quarterbacks who are gunslingers, who's the first QB that comes to the head? The guy we called the gunslinger, Brett Favre, right? Like, that's that guy. I suspect that if you take a minute to think about it, and you go back and you think about the career of Brett Favre in Green Bay, or with the Jets, or with the Vikings, or wherever, I think you could probably come up with some games where that gunslinger philosophy did a little bit more harm in a game.
Yeah, because he also led, I don't know if he still does, led the NFL in interceptions in history. He threw the most.
Because the gunslinger mentality can do some wonderful things for you. It can create some incredible plays. It can also, game by game, get you in a lot of trouble. And in the NFL, you can get away with that. Because you have 2, 3, 4 bad games in the NFL and still be a division winner. 2, 3, 4 bad games in the NFL, still be a wild card team and get it right in the playoffs. College football, you do not have that breathing room. I think you have more with an expanded playoffs. You obviously have more breathing room than you did back when it was only the top 2 or the top 4 teams that got to go to the playoffs. You get a little bit more breathing room, but not that much, right? Like, your breathing room in the SEC right now, there are 6 teams that have not taken a loss. And so that we are clear about it, 5 of those teams have only played 1 SEC game. Ole Miss has played 3. They are 3-0 in conference play right now. Like, they are far and away past 1-1 Tennessee. But that gunslinger mentality can get you in some trouble sometimes when you are playing teams that have stacked defensive backfields primarily, and there's a fistful of those in this conference. So for me, I like Josh Heupel. Josh Heupel, or as Jacob just called him in the chat, grown-up Bobby Hill. I like Josh Heupel. Josh Heupel is probably the most boring coach that I like. If you look around at the coaches that, like, I go out of my way to say I like, I call football dudes, you know what they all have in common? They are electric factories. PJ Fleck is the dude that sprints down the hallway and does a Metallica stage dive onto his own team, and they carry him around the locker room. It's great. Brent Key. Go look at Brent Key. Brent Key's interviews are not electric, but go watch that guy on game day. He's a gas station, man. He's great. Go look at Clark Lea. I'm a little disappointed that Vandy hasn't been dropping Clark Lea halftime speeches like they did last year, because those things are fantastic. I have a theory as to why they don't. And my theory as to why they don't is because sometimes Clark Lea, he says bad words in the halftime speech. And I think some of the Vanderbilt alumni don't love their school being represented in that light. I'm like, buddy, if your team is, for the first, last, and only time in history, threatening to be an SEC contender, you can put up with a aura in your halftime speech. Yeah. Yeah. Genuinely, I'll take some vulgarity if you're getting me as a Vanderbilt squad to 4-0, 5-0, 6-0. I'll take it. So, blah, 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 blah. Josh Heupel's kind of a boring guy compared to those. At the same time, football team's playing right now. They're balling out. And more importantly, I think he saw what he had in Joey Aguilar, and he said, let's put that into the playbook. Let's make sure we take advantage of that. And so Tennessee's leaning into that gunslinger offense. They're running 7s and 9s down the middle and down the outside of the football field and saying, chunk it down there, young man. You got a cannon. Unload some shells. Let's see what happens. But that will eventually get you in trouble, and it did against Georgia, even if you did put up 41. Later on in the season, when Tennessee's looking at some other teams, like if they end up in front of them LSU, if they end up in front of them Alabama, who's got a good defensive backfield, that's where you get into a little bit of trouble. All right, let's get to it. Ladies and gentlemen, it is 7:09. You've got less than 52 minutes before you've got to be to the office. When you get to the office, you're talking sports. You got to know what's going on. You're welcome for this. Lonzo, what's worse for me? Being a bad football fan because I did not watch Thursday night football last night, even though it turned out to be, from what I see, at least a pretty good game, or being a good baseball guy in that the reason I didn't watch Thursday Night Football is because I was locked in on Yankees Red Sox late at night. Which of those is worse for me?
Did you at least have it on one of the screens?
No, I was in bed. I'm not going to lie. Okay. I was in bed.
All right. So I would say you've had
one screen.
You've had a baseball show for a really long time.
But I don't anymore.
Yeah, but you talked about patterns earlier. You talked about how routines. And one of your routines for the last 5 years is getting all the baseball in that you can get into so you can talk about it tomorrow. So,
I agree, but I to some degree.
Listen, I didn't watch either, and here's the reason why I didn't. It's the Rams and San Francisco. San Francisco beat up. There's no way that they're going to even come close to competing with the Rams, and we both were wrong.
Yeah, I agree. But, like, that's why we watch the NFL, right? Because those things happen, like, with regularity. It's not a—
It's Mac Jones, though. And, I mean, the suit is wicked. I mean, that he was wearing—
Yeah, I don't think any of us expected 389 and two tutties from Mac Jones.
Yeah.
I got online last night, and one of the things I saw was a Panther fan that I follow on Twitter, and he's like— And I don't think it was sarcasm. He wasn't joking. He's like, can we trade Bryce Young for Mac Jones? I'm like, listen to yourself. Listen to yourself for a minute. Although, that was a
pretty good game against the Rams.
Can you remind me? Can y'all remind me? Where was Mac Jones before he got to San Francisco? Can anybody remind me? Don't worry, I know. He was at New England when they were in their transition period after the hoodie franchise problem. Then he went down to Jacksonville, butthole of America, and he was there when they were in their transition period.
By the way,
problem. And now he's on a new team with a good coach and a good system, and he's balling TF out.
If he was still in New England when Vrabel got there, he never would have went anywhere. Vrabel would have kept him.
I don't know. Drake May looks pretty good.
I know, but you wouldn't have known about that.
Oh, fair enough.
I'm saying
if
the transitional coach was actually Vrabel, which we were thinking it was going to be, if it was Vrabel, Mac Jones would have still been in New England.
Fair enough. The point here is franchise problem, not franchise quarterback problem. We'll circle back around to that. Let's get to item number one. Sure, why not? Let's make that item number one. The 49ers knock off the LA Rams last night, 26-23. I think I've got to be furious if I am Matt Stafford throwing for 389 yards and three touchdowns and losing the football game.
Got out-dueled.
He did get out-dueled.
I mean, or out-kicked.
Well, I wouldn't say he got out-dueled. I would say the Rams got out-dueled. And more importantly, boys and girls, on blank and short, take care of the gosh danged football, please.
I was going to say, there was technically a fumble that really cost them.
Kyren Williams fumbles going into the end zone. They also had a blocked field goal that changes the outcome of this game, potentially. And in overtime, the Rams had a chance, and they get stuffed on fourth and one.
At least it didn't end in a stinking tie. So, I mean, there's that.
You know, I am convinced now, and I'll play you a clip from Ross Tucker later because he was on Patrick's show earlier, and boy, howdy, he went off on the tie.
There are a lot of people going off on the tie. You're the only one I know that's okay with the tie.
You know, ordinarily, when one of us says you're the only one who, the other one gets mad most of them. I'm not, because you're right. I think I'm the only person I know that's like, it's a tie. You played a hell of a lot of good football. One team was clearly not better than the other. It's a draw. You get half a point, effectively. It's a point system. You get half a point. If that half a point keeps you out of the playoffs, so be it. If that half a point gets you into the playoffs, so be it.
All right, so
it's half a point.
So I've seen a bunch of people that I don't know that are upset about it. The only people I've talked to about it are you and Cole, and you're the only one I know.
Oh, I know. I agree. I am the only one.
So between the two people that I've talked to about it.
I am the only one who's like, yeah, it's fine. It's a tie. Sometimes things end where one person's not better than the other person. You can't go until you die. Like, that's not it. All right, blah, 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 blah. 23-26, Matt Stafford, 30 of 47, 389, three touchdowns in a game he lost. Mac bleeping Jones, 33 of 49, 342, and a pair of touchdowns. Neither of these teams could run the ball. McCaffrey only had 57 yards on 22 carries. That is less than 2.7 yards per carry.
How many receptions did he have, though?
Christian McCaffrey had 8 grabs for 82 yards and a touchdown.
There we go.
The point is they couldn't run the ball. 74 rushing yards for the 49ers, 78 rushing yards for the Rams. Kyren Williams responsible for 65 of those on 14 carries, but he also had that fumble going in, may have cost the Rams the game, and then he got stuffed on that fourth and one in overtime that did cost the Rams at least the chance to win the game. Let's get to item numero dos. Got a couple of baseball stories for you here. We have got three games from last night as the MLB's wild card round came to its conclusion. The Detroit Tigers, who gave up a 15.5 game lead with 2 months left in the season and allowed the Cleveland Guardians to win the division. The Tigers turned around and said, yep, we'll take that back. Thank you very much. They go on the road to Cleveland for the three-game set. They finish it off last night with a 6-3 win. Jack Flaherty, 4.2 innings, 3 hits, 1 run allowed. Cade 4 in the winning effort. They pulled Sassoni, Cleveland did, after just 2.1, gave up 2 hits, 1 run. Cade 3, he's a short-term pitcher anyway, but he probably got chased about an inning earlier than I expected. The Tigers had 10 hits on the night, including one home run on the evening from a guy I did not know was going to be this morning my second favorite name in baseball, Dylan Dingler. So last night, we had a great showing from Dingler and Schlitter. What a night for people with the mind of a 10-year-old. Incredible evening.
I did read Dingler, by the way.
You left Dingler, but you took out Schlitter?
Yes.
That seems like a risk. I get it. I'm good with it. The Cubs knock off the San Diego Padres. The Padres were a lot of people's choice to win the World Series. Instead, they do not even escape the wild card round with a 3-1 defeat at the hands of the Chicago Cubs. Jameson Taillon, 4 innings, 2 hits, 4 Ks, no runs allowed, and no walks for Chicago. Chicago from the dish, 13 hits in this one last night, including a home run that went to Michael Bush. Pete Crow Armstrong had an RBI single, and Dansby Swanson pulled in a bases loaded walk in the second inning. That gave the Cubs a 2-0 lead. Bush hit his dong in the seventh inning. Merrill was able to get a home run to right field in the ninth inning. Padres tried to get a rally going, but they could not. They are also headed to the crib. Chicago will move on to take on Milwaukee in round number 2. And the Yankees are on to the divisional series after a 4-0 shutout win over the Red Sox because of say his name and he throws strikes. I believe in Cam Schlitter. I hope that we get to see a bunch of big Schlitter performances throughout the course of these playoffs. Listen to the stat line, and please, before I say it, keep in mind, this man is a rookie. 8 innings, 5 hits, no runs, no walks, 12 strikeouts. The first ever rook to go 10 Ks, no runs, no walks in a playoff game. There's not a lot of guys who have done it at all. He's a rook, and he pulled it off last night. The Yankees on to the divisional round. They will face another AL East rival, this time the Toronto Blue Jays. All 4 divisional rounds will get started tomorrow. You have got the Mariners hosting the Tigers, the Blue Jays hosting the Yankees, the Phillies hosting the Dodgers, the only sweep in the wild card round, and the Brew Crew hosting the Cubs in those series throughout the day tomorrow as the wild card round gets underway. Starting tonight, item number 3. The WNBA Finals will get their kick 8 p.m. this evening as the Las Vegas Aces will host the Phoenix Mercury. The Aces are a slight favorite in the series. They are also a slight favorite in tonight. Well, a decent favorite, minus 155 on the money line tonight against the Mercury. I really like this series. On one hand, you have got the Las Vegas Aces, who have the best offense in the WNBA. They score 87 points a game. That's a very solid number. On the flip side, the Phoenix Mercury have one of the best 3 defenses in the WNBA. So this is very much, I think, going to be a test of the concept, do defenses win championships, or does a great offense in basketball nowadays win you a championship? We'll find out in the WNBA which of those is true this evening. The number 1 offense in LV hosting the number 3 defense in the WNBA, Phoenix. First tip tonight at 8 p.m. Las Vegas, a 3.5-point favorite in the opener. When we come back, let's get some football in here. Let's start looking up and down the college football slate for the weekend. The games that matter, even if it's only to you. That's next on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show is back on your radio. It is the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, and you. 844-326-3663 is the number if you would like to be a part of the program. Let's take a look at some of the college football games coming up this weekend and the impact that they may have on the AP Top 25 and the playoff picture. Real quick, I do want you to, if you can, stick around for the next segment. And I'm saving it for the next segment because I've got a soundbite that I want to play for you. The commissioner of the athletic conference had some statements yesterday where he talked about the preseason top 25, which is obviously a discussion.
The athletic conference.
The athletic conference. That is where the undefeated Memphis Tigers play. That's where the undefeated Navy midshipmen play. Memphis has got a win over the SEC and a Big Ten win in hand right now and are undefeated right now. Tulane has an SEC win under the belt. So there, it's an important conference right now because it is looking more and more like our group of five playoff representative might come out of the athletic conference. And I'm not saying that they will. If one of those teams is able to remain perfect through the season, is it possible one of them could actually grab a bye in the opening round in a straight seed format? I don't know. Probably not, but we'll talk about it because it's a very interesting comment and I want to get to it. But I do want to look up and down the schedule and save that one for the next segment where we have a little bit more time to discuss it. So let's get into the games coming up this weekend. Georgia 20.5-point favorites over the Kentucky Wildcats this weekend. And I feel bad for Kentucky because this has got to be for Kirby Smart. Kirby Smart has, like, he is owned by Alabama and literally nobody else. But Bama's, what, 7-1 against Georgia in the last eight, including multiple wins in postseason. Alabama has the University of Georgia's number. The problem is not the regular season loss to Alabama for Georgia, because I do think that Georgia's got they've got enough ahead of them on the schedule that if Georgia wins and goes 11-1, like, I still think that they are a playoff team. Now, granted, Georgia does not have the schedule ahead of them that South Carolina and Oklahoma have. They've got Kentucky this weekend. Then they've got a now unranked Auburn. Again, I would keep an eye on the Auburn Tigers because it could be argued that Auburn should be a one-loss team at the worst, maybe undefeated. But that's a rivalry game, and it's on the road. They get by that. They've got Ole Miss. Again, Ole Miss is kind of one of those teams that I go, it's a good team. I do not know yet that they are proven because we've gotten effectively two games worth of tape on Trinidad Chambliss. Will DCs, if they get enough time, be able to figure him out, figure out where the weakness is in his game and exploit it? Will Ole Miss eventually Ole Miss themselves out of the rankings? We'll find out. Florida, okay, world's largest outdoor cocktail party. You're not changing that. At Mississippi State, back home for what is probably their toughest test yet or remaining, and that is at home against the Texas Longhorns. But that game doesn't look quite as intriguing as we thought it might at the beginning of the year. Not saying it's not at all. This is a top 10 matchup, or it will be at the time, because I don't think Georgia's losing between here and there. But still, tough game. Then at home for Charlotte, and then they've got the rambling wreck of Georgia Tech. And again, the way that Haynes King is playing, Georgia will be favored in that game. Let's not pretend that Georgia Tech can't win that game. They went to what? What was it, 8 overtimes last year? It's a winnable game for the rambling wreck. Tough uphill, but they can do it. This is we talked about get-right games a lot. I don't know if this is a get-right game for Georgia. It does feel like a game that Georgia needs to go out and they need to cover the spread, like, comfortably. They need to go out and they need to put 24-27 worth of win on the University of Kentucky. It feels like a Kirby Smart special here. It feels like this is a Kirby Smart wants to remind America exactly who the hell he is and exactly who the hell the Georgia Bulldogs are. Give me Georgia by a lot of points in this one. I don't think it's close. Again, Kentucky's not even that good. Here's an interesting one for you. Iowa State is at Cincinnati. That's not why this game is interesting. Iowa State's ranked number 14 in the country right now. Iowa State is currently 5-0 undefeated in the Big 12. Iowa State is currently in the driver's seat for a Big 12 championship and potentially for a bye in the college football playoffs. Kansas State's on the road at Cincinnati, Iowa State's on the road at Cincinnati on Saturday. They're 1.5-point underdogs to the Bearcats. They are 1.5-point underdogs to the Cincinnati Bearcats, a team that lost to Nebraska in round one, but they've hung 34, 70, and 37 in the last 3 weeks. A team that is very much still alive in the Big 12 at 3-1, only because there are four teams with four wins and one with five, one of them being Iowa State. The Cyclones are a dog on the road at Cincinnati. This game is massively important. With a loss here, the Big 12, I'm not going to say gets flipped on its head, but the leaderboard gets reshuffled a little bit. And Cincinnati gets a tie and is technically second place in that conference and very much still alive. Wisconsin's at Michigan. Lonzo, Michigan's a 17.5-point favorite over Wisconsin in this one. I think you're probably going to see Luke Fickell lose his job at Wisconsin at the end of the year. They got hammered by Alabama. They turned around and got beat convincingly by Maryland last weekend.
You know, there are some coaches that are good at a certain level and they're not good at the next level. And
Billy Napier?
I think Fickell is one of those guys.
Luke Fickell?
Yeah. I think at the level below this, I thought he was pretty good. This one, it may just be too much.
It may be. This Wisconsin team's not good. 17.5-point dogs on the road at Michigan. Number 22, Illinois, the ILL, 9.5-point favorites against the Boilermakers. Illinois is another one of those interesting teams because they came in with high expectations, aspirations. They were a top, where they were like capped at around 12, 10, somewhere in that ranking. I don't remember 2 weeks ago. Then they got hammered by Indiana. Indiana beat them by 53 points. But then they took it back against USC. And again, I'm not saying USC is back under Lincoln Riley. I'm saying going into that game, the vibes were high around the mighty Trojans of University of Southern Cal. And Iowa State got that win, an impressive win at home against the ILL. This is another game, it feels like to me, that should be out of hand. If Illinois is on a redemption tour at this point because of how they lost to Indiana. And again, I think now, more so than last year, as much fun as we had with the run that they had last year, I think Indiana is a football team this year, like a threat football team. Do I think they're as good as the top, the Ohio States of the world? No, but I do think they are one of those teams that you could argue if they play well, if they play perfectly, even against a team like Michigan or Ohio State, I think Kurt Zinetti could say, and he would have a point if they play perfectly.
I'm glad you found that again.
I know. I've been meaning to go grab it for a minute now because Fernando Mendoza is that guy. Point is, I don't think it is a bad loss for Illinois in how you lost the game. Not that you lost Indiana, how you lost. This has got to be a spot where you stack, again, consistency, a number of these games together. Clemson, 14.5-point favorites the day before they take on the North Carolina Tar Heels. The most interesting thing about tomorrow for me is going to be watching where the late money comes in on this game. Watching where the pro bettors in Vegas put the money on this game. Watching where this line goes. 14.5-point favorites are Clemson. Do we wake up tomorrow and see that line move to Clemson minus 15.5? 16.5? Or do we wake up tomorrow and see that line move down? Because if it comes down a single point, if it comes down to 13.5, what it will tell me is that the big wigs in Las Vegas, Nevada, the guys who gamble on sports for a living, the Sharks, it tells me that they do not believe there is a redemption tour at hand for the Clemson Tigers. Not that they can't beat North Carolina, but if that number comes from 14.5 down to a 13.5-point game with that magic number, when I say magic number, I'm talking about numbers of confidence. If a team goes to 14.5, that's a confidence number. That's Vegas going, that is that we believe this team is going to hit that number. 13.5 is like, we feel pretty good about it, right? 14.5 is the number. You've got that number now. But the late money is the pro money. Does that change up? We'll find out. So we're going to obviously talk X's and O's about this game with a little bit more depth later on in the show. But out of the gate, great one. 14.5 points over the North Carolina Tar Heels. It is on the road. What's your take on this line and Clemson's ability to cover it?
I think they're going to cover.
I do too.
They're not as bad as we think they are. They're not as good as a lot of people thought they were going to be, but I think they'll be fine.
Here's the problem.
I thought North Carolina would be better than what they are, and I was wrong. I still would be interested to see your reaction if Clemson does. Like I said, I think yesterday, if Clemson were to lose to North Carolina, what it will do to the fan base, because I've experienced that a bunch of times early on, and interesting is the only word I can come up with. It's watching, it's like going to the mall and watching people. It's the same thing.
If
because you could go to the mall and watch people, like a few weeks ago, and you'd see a bunch of orange. I bet if you go to the mall, if they lose tomorrow, you will see zero orange anywhere.
The reaction of me, if they lose to North Carolina, is it's predictable. I'm going to come in here Monday. I'm going to say, good morning, welcome to the Rob Brown Show. The phone lines are open. And then I'm going to sit back in the chair. And I'm going to see, do they ring a single time? Or do they ring off the hook with people going, we got to change something?
If they lose to North Carolina, which neither one of us think they will, but if they do, then the cries that are just sparse here and there will become an outcry from just about everyone saying Dabo needs to go.
That'll be interesting. Or is it just everybody else needs to go? I don't know. We'll find out. I don't think we'll find out. But I also have this thing that is lingering in the back of the head for me, which is, and I've said this dating back to week one, I am putting an emphasis this year on what's on tape, what's on the film. Because at the end of the day, narratives can lie, media members can lie, coaches and players can lie, beat reporters can lie. A lot of different things that can happen that lie to you about who a team is. There is only one thing that don't lie. Tape. Tape don't lie. And my argument would be, after the LSU game, we said, hey, this team's fine. They're going to bounce back. And then we saw the Troy game, and the tape didn't lie. And then after the Troy game, we said, oh, they'll be fine. They'll bounce back. And then they played and lost to Georgia Tech. And you went, uh-oh. But we think they'll be fine. It's Syracuse next week, right? It's get-right game. Get-right game against Cuse. Very similar situation to North Carolina. The only difference being I have a lot of faith in Fran Brown and zero in Bill Belichick, but brand new head coach, brand new quarterback, a lot of question marks, whatever. They went out there and got it handed to him by the Cuse. The tape don't lie. And the only concern that I have, the one thing that is, I do think Clemson wins and covers, but I have to tell you, that is going against everything I've said, a vibes pick. There's a part of me that wants to say, throw $5 on North Carolina to cover, throw $5 on them to win outright, and see what happens. Because what I can say is, while North Carolina is, in my opinion, a very poorly coached team, I will also say they're not a team that rolls over. Like, they fight, but I think that's the boys in the locker room. I think the coaching stinks. And you can out-coach them. The question is, will you out-heart them to cover? I don't know. We'll find out. We're going to talk about the X's and O's of that game a little later on. When we come back, the commissioner of the athletic conference had a take on preseason rankings. And while it's not necessarily anything that would ordinarily make the radar, we've had a lot of conversation about preseason rankings and how they're impacting the rankings today, which will impact the rankings, the playoff rankings that drop a month from tomorrow. So I would like to address that when we come back. I think you'll be interested in what he had to say, because I was. Back after this on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. you get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Rob Brown Show. It is the Fan Upstate. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Rob Brown, the Great One Lonzo, and you. The preseason rankings have been an ongoing discussion on this show. Well, Rob, we are like 5 weeks removed from the preseason. Why are we talking about them? Great question, hypothetical listener. I made up for this exact situation. I'll explain. The reason why is the preseason rankings dictate the week one rankings, which dictate the week two rankings and dictate the week three rankings and dictate the week four rankings and five and six and seven onward and upward until we get to November 4th, which the whatever week of the season that is rankings will then dictate the playoff rankings. Now, not as the primary driver, or at least you hope not, but they absolutely have an impact. And so therefore, it is fair to say that the preseason rankings directly impact, dictate the playoff rankings when they drop on November 4th. And of course, as always, the week one playoff rankings or the first playoff rankings dictate the final playoff rankings. It is hard to climb in the rankings if teams ahead of you are not losing. And even though we have expanded to 12, I think any of you South Carolina fans would say, I'd take the 12 seed over no seed at all. Just give me a chance, right? So one of the interesting conversations about the preseason rankings that has been going on is, are they good? And my answer has been, no, they're not good. They're not good. And I'm not saying they shouldn't exist, but I am saying they shouldn't exist. I am saying also, I know why they exist. We had this conversation at length going into week one. Because number 3, Clemson. Number 6, LSU. Saturday night. Like, that's a lot sexier than Clemson versus LSU. Because the people who are casual viewers or fringe viewers, sticking some numbers out front that say, hey, this team is probably a team that can compete for a title, is a hell of a lot sexier than saying Clemson versus LSU. And if you don't know ball and don't follow it in the offseason, you might go like, okay, that's two big teams, but like it doesn't have the same sex appeal to it, right? Well, the members of the American Conference, doesn't get a lot of preseason hype. But if you go look at the American Conference right now, perhaps, perchance, per maybe, they should. Because if I go look up and down the American Conference right now, I see an undefeated 3-0 Navy midshipman. You will remember that that was my, 4-0 regular season, 3-0 in conference, undefeated Navy. Navy was my pick to be a playoff participant out of the group of five. But you will also see an undefeated Memphis Tigers team. And you may go, all right, Rob, what's the big deal about that? Memphis beat Arkansas. That's an SEC win. Granted, against a bottom-tier SEC team that just fired their head coach midseason. By the way, nice Game of Thrones impression, Bobby Petrino. Resigns in disgrace from Arkansas. Convinces Sam Pittman to hire him back as an offensive coordinator slash consultant. And then bides his time until Pittman screws up, and now he's the head coach again. That is some Littlefinger stuff going down in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Whatever. Memphis beat that team. North Texas right now is undefeated. Tulane is 4-1, not undefeated as it stands right now, but their only loss is to Ole Miss. They have a win over ACC Duke. Again, maybe not a powerhouse, but a win. The point is, this American conference is probably not going to put forward a national champion. But as I've always said about small schools, even when I'll go, yeah, I don't think that team can beat Georgia, Ohio State, I still think they should get a chance if earned. I think the American Conference is making an argument that they should get an invite to the dance, maybe even outside of just their conference champion. The commissioner of the American Conference is a guy by the name of Tom Pernetti. He was on Sirius yesterday, and he had this take.
Wow, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
The articulation is what's been in my head all this time, and I wasn't able to say it. I think he nailed it big time. Now will people actually listen?
No. Here's why. When I say that the people who dictate college football are not college football fans, and when I say not college football fans, I don't mean like, oh, they're not like us. They're not like us as fans. They're not out here celebrating their teams and all that. No, I mean like they're not fans of the game of football. But they don't like football. I don't mean to. This is not something that, because this is something Josh Pate says all the time. I'm not trying to rip a Josh Pate take here. I have agreed with this take. I have had this take for a very long time. And it's fine. It's like sometimes this is like if somebody else says, I like chocolate cake, and you're like, yo, you're stealing my take. No, you're not. It's a very popular take. Nobody's stealing that take. It's popular. The people who run college football are not college football fans. They are money fans. They're sales fans and nothing else. And the reality is, while I do believe at this point that the preseason rankings are detrimental, honestly, I think probably the first 4 weeks of rankings are detrimental. Not just bad. I think they're detrimental because they craft a narrative, and I think that Tom Pernetti here is correct in the way that he vocalizes it. They craft a narrative without enough information to craft an accurate narrative. And that is my problem. They craft a narrative without the information to do so. And do you know what we call when someone writes a story that is based not on reality and empirical evidence and data? We call it fantasy. We call it fiction. That's where wizards and dragons live. Those things aren't real. Those things aren't happening in the real world. We write stories about them, and that's all well and good, but we write them from a sense of fiction and fantasy. Why? So we can sell some books and make some great movies. Lord of the Rings trilogy is still one of the greatest pieces of art of all time. That's the point. I have said this morning, without it even being connected to this segment, I don't know what Florida State is yet. I don't know. On one hand, they beat Alabama in week number one, and everybody lost their gosh darn minds about it. And you should have. I don't think anybody saw that coming. But then they turned around 3 weeks later, and they lose on the road to Virginia. Granted, I did see that one coming. I called it on Friday. I didn't call the upset, but I said this is an upset alert game. Florida State on the road for the first time. Tony Elliott's Virginia offense is absolutely dicing dudes right now. This is an upset alert game. I don't know what to make of that because I still don't know what to make of Alabama. They got hammered by Florida State, but then they went to Athens and beat Georgia. Which one of those is more true to what they are? With the understanding that you're never as good as your best game and you're never as bad as your worst game, I don't think we know who Alabama is yet. And I think that matters. I don't think we know who Georgia is yet. I don't think that there is, and I say this, and I do think there are some years when this isn't true. I think there are some years, and I think there are some teams that you look at them and you go, it's week two, but I know who that team is. Like, we see it. And ordinarily, it's because that team jumps off the page as elite, like clearly elite. I don't think there is a team. This is why I asked the question last week of y'all, and nobody volunteered an answer. Does any team jump off the page as elite right now? Ohio State jumps off the page as very good. Not stand out from everybody else good. Oregon, to me, and I mean this, the only team that I look at and I go, that team might be elite, is the Oregon Ducks behind Dante Moore. That team might be elite. They went on the road and beat Penn State. But again, they didn't play anybody before they played Penn State, so there is there enough of that to say so? Not for me. Is Miami elite? I don't think so. I've seen some bad spots out of Miami. They haven't lost a game yet, but they were in a fist fight with Notre Dame, who lost the very next week. You know, they for, I would say, for two quarters in a fist fight with Florida, who's probably firing their coach at the end of the year. I don't think there is an elite team. The point here is what old Tommy Boy said there is accurate. When you are asked to vote in a preseason poll, in this era of college football, when you have, for any given team that's not Air Force, Navy, Army, or Clemson, you have a huge set of data that is just unknown. Now, you can venture some good guesses. My guess for the Group of Five champ was Navy. Still a lot of football left between here and the end of the year. Navy still got to play Notre Dame. If they lose that game, maybe Memphis goes undefeated and I'm wrong. But the point is, you know what I called that one? Not a prediction, a guess. A guess, because I didn't know. He has a point that what the media is doing, and I will actually confirm this as a media member who voted in the SEC poll preseason and the ACC poll preseason. I will agree with him. We are gambling. We're making a prediction. We're gambling. And for us, the payoff is not money. The payoff is the ability at the end of the year to grab a mic and go, hey, I told you Georgia was going to win the SEC. I are very super duper smart, so you should pay attention to me. That's our prize for gambling correctly. And our punishment in gambling, it's you lose money. The gamble for us in getting it wrong is that other people get it right, and those people say, look at me, I got it right, and I have to go, yeah, I didn't get it right, which is okay in my book, but for a lot of y'all, it's not. So I think he has the point. I think he has the point that I made preseason, just in the words and experience of somebody who this impacts dramatically more than I do. Preseason rankings, which impact regular season rankings, which impact playoff rankings, which obviously set the playoffs. They are largely based on a lack of information and knowledge. I would not have a problem with that if they didn't have any impact on the season, if it was purely superficial. But they are clearly not purely superficial, so I appreciate that turn of phrase from Tom Permanente, the commissioner of the American Conference. Let's take a break. When we come back here in just a minute, we'll talk some college ball. I got Hayton S. Mario coming up for you in about 25 minutes. He'll break down from the North Carolina perspective the UNC-Clemson game. We've got Rashad Beard talking Panthers. John, Kevin, and Jarrell talking high school ball. We've got Denton Day from SiriusXM talking college ball. Oh, it's going to be a hoot. Now, ladies and gentlemen, to tell you all about Yankees pitcher Cam Schlitter, here's Lonzo Sports Flash.
It's going to be a hoot.
I told you, I use old people words now.
It took overtime, but the San Francisco 49ers knocked off the LA Rams 26-23. The Niners ran for only 74 yards, but backup quarterback Mac Jones completed 33 of 49 passes for 342 yards and a pair of touchdowns. Rams quarterback Matt Stafford had 389 passing yards and all three touchdowns in the loss. The Rams were stuffed, according to Rob Brown, on fourth down and overtime to end the game. The Detroit Tigers eliminated the Cleveland Guardians with a 6-3 win yesterday. The Tigers had 10 hits, including a homer from Dylan Dingler in the sixth and a trio of RBI singles in the seventh that broke the game open. Detroit will face Seattle in the divisional series. The Chicago Cubs ended the Padres season with a 3-1 win in Game 3. Jameson Taillon, I believe is how you say it, went four innings, allowing two hits and no runs while striking out four. Chicago's offense had 13 hits. The Cubs will face Milwaukee in the second round.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.